Strap yourself in.
Because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Yes, sir. Reading you loud and clear. Clear. The clock has started.
This week's episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Small Skies Podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. I'm your host, Just Nate, and this week we've got DK across the table from me. Welcome, DK.
Greetings.
And Dennis, we have a guest on the phone today. We should have just drug our equipment with us last week when we were in person with our guest.
He was busy.
Yeah, he was very busy. Apparently CEOs are busy. I've never been one, so I probably never will be.
No, not at this rate.
Probably not.
Okay.
So on the phone, we have the co-founder and CEO of a company called Light Eye Systems Inc., Mr. Kenneth, is it Geyer? Welcome, Kenneth.
Correct. Thank you. So, I thought this was a Joe Rogan show. Did I get the wrong
it is.
Number?
It's Joe Rogan, but better.
Kidding,
there's two of us.
Hey, so, we need to get Nate to shave his head now.
Get a couple tattoos.
The difference is we're not smoking pot around on the table here.
Really?
Well, guys, thank you for having me.
Gummies don't count.
It is.
Yeah, we're all in the defense contracting business, so that's not even funny anymore.
Yeah, we're all getting reinvestigated again.
So, Kenneth, thanks for being on today. I am excited about this. So, kind of a long story here. I'll tell it short. But I found you guys actually in the Colorado Business Magazine. Your exceptional marketing manager had put an article in there, and I saw you guys. And there's like an 8x10 glossy of you, Kenneth, on there, and then some of your equipment. And so I went to the website and I was like, man, I didn't know this existed in Colorado. I need to find these guys. And, lo and behold, weeks later, we're actually, looking at a solicitation, and it's regards some of your technology. And I'll let you talk about that in a second here. And so I reached out to the company and, found out that, you know, the preponderance of the company in the manufacturing is actually here in Colorado up in Centennial. And so we had the opportunity last week to go visit you and your staff. Thank you for a great visit. But again, this has just been kind of a journey here along with a Light Eye, and really excited to have you guys on and excited to potentially partner with you guys later in the future to do things and also to have other folks in Colorado learn, well, Colorado nationally and globally, since our listening audience has grown, to learn about your company. So with that, Nate always says in 20 seconds or less, no, please talk
two
for a while.
Minutes or less.
No, but tell us about you and your business.
Yeah, so let's set the stage for Kenneth real quick here, because I forgot to tell him this in pre-show here. So because you are remote, Kenneth, let us talk a little bit too. Just so it's not you, so it gives you a chance to get a drink of water or whatever, too. We've had some people come on, they're like, literally don't take a breath for like 20 minutes straight. And we're like, well, thanks for listening, guys. So we really want this to be a conversation with you. So,
okay. And I believe that's how my wife would describe when I talk. So I'm glad you warned me.
There you go.
Light Eye is a 21-year-old company now. I'm one of the co-founders, Tom Scott. And I co-founded Light Eye. It actually came out of another company that we had in the late 90s that did virtual reality think tanks or labs and We did the helmets and the software, and we brought all kinds of different companies together, and we did stuff for NASA and the military and everything else. In the late 90s, the Navy came and asked us to do a head-mounted display. They were looking for a single monocular for the A-109 helicopter, and we couldn't find anybody that wanted to build that. So we figured out how to build it, and that was the very first light eye. And that got put into all the A-109s out there, the pilots and co-pilots. Essentially, it was a little display that sat next to the NVG tubes. They had no place in the cockpit to put any more monitors. They had a new camera on the belly of the helicopter, and that solved the problem. We created that, and then that took off and got a life itself. So we sold the virtual reality company in 1999 at the end of the year in January. First day, business day of January 2000, LiDAR came into being. And we've grown from there. We started out doing head-mounted displays, got into thermal cameras, covert thermal cameras. We did a lot of SOCOM work, a lot of small covert-type systems, and that kind of kept growing. That's why a lot of people hadn't heard of LiDAR. We didn't really advertise. We didn't really do a lot of marketing early days. We kept quiet about the things we worked on, which a lot of our end users appreciated. But we've grown, and starting, and we can get into more of that, but you know, starting in 2014, 2015 timeframe, we started getting into more bigger systems and developing a whole airbase protection areas and providing systems for airports and things like that. So our company has grown dramatically over that time. We went from a two-man operation early days to where we are now, which is we have two facilities. A 50,000 square foot facility that's just half built out here in just south of Centennial Airport. And then we have the, on the other side of the airport, we have a 24,000 square foot facility that has been our home for since 2009. And we're just over 50 employees now.
So when we were up there, we looked at a couple of your, so you have a manufacturing facility where you actually build the products. And can you tell us a little more about that? Because some of the equipment in there, your COO, Derek, is it Newsom?
Newsom?
Yes, Newsom. I remembered it correctly. Woo!
You're just showing off today, aren't you?
I'm clicking. it's a strange day. Anyways, so he took us over to the facility. So can you tell us about that, what you guys do over there and the types of equipment you have? Because I think some of it's really... You know, if other companies are looking for some manufacturing support for things, he said that, you know, there's always discussions available out there. So I don't know if you want to tell folks about that.
Yeah. So the two offices are doing two different types of work. So the smaller office is doing our small head-mounted displays, augmented weapon sights, little small thermal cameras. We engineer and build those here. In our bigger 50,000 square foot facility that we just opened up a year ago, we have a full Haas CNC machine shop, so that we're making aluminum and plastic parts, everything we need. We sometimes contract out, we work for other people, and we also have a mechanical engineering over there, and that's also where we assemble all the big systems, like the counter drone systems, the counter UAS systems, and other things, trailers, build out vans, depending on what the end users are needing, 20-foot containers, sea containers, if you picture it, with systems and command and control built into those. So that's all done at the big facility.
Right. And so there's, you know, you guys are doing a lot of stuff over there. I think there was, I want to say there was like five systems in development over there, which is pretty impressive. All
they're
the
not
stuff
small
you're
systems.
Do. Yeah, they're pretty
so
big.
So they're not systems. Heads-up displays for the
right. Those
helmets.
Were large yeah. mill vans. Right. And you do, you don't just do yeah. the, can you talk about the counter UAS a little bit? I know you got to kind of keep things at a certain level, but,
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? What you're offering as part of that system there?
Yeah. So it started out in 2015 for us. I mean, actually we were doing work and it was a discussion about counter drone, starting in 2014 and then 2015, the Army RAF, Rapid Equipping Force, put out the call to industry and said, we have a drone problem, specifically in Iraq and Afghanistan. We need to get the control of the low-altitude air defense picture. There's, you know, basically, we control the big stuff, but low-flying, slow-moving drones were a problem. and in a lot of ways for our military. So we answered, we were one of the companies, we answered the call. We went out to Yuma in the deserts of Arizona for 3 weeks. We brought our system together. We had, Lyday's a family of companies or a partnership of different companies that we work with to create these systems. So Numerica, who is also a Colorado company up in Fort Collins, is our software partner. We work with Chess Dynamics in the UK. We do enterprise control systems in the UK, Pratt & Miller up in Michigan. And so all of us at different times put in the different layers of the system. Lyday integrated it together and brought it out to that trial in 2015. And that was kind of the beginning of the counter-US UAS industry. There was probably 18, 20 companies out there. And then that culminated with, as we went through, it was a great exercise because it was 3 weeks unscripted. Basically, they just tried to attack you with drones, and we learned a lot. It was, from an industry standpoint, one of the most beneficial exercises we did. And that led to a culmination where they had what they called Desert Chance 3. That was June 2016. Again, we were out there with the production quality battle-ready systems, and that led to our contract. And that was a 30-day event out in Yuma. Again, unscripted, just invaluable to our industry. You're fighting the system you built. You're testing or exercising it. You're fighting it like it was meant to be done in a battlefield kind of scenario. And that was awesome. So that led to our first contract, which we deployed. We got the contract the first business day of September 2016. And 30 days later, we delivered three systems out to Yuma. It was kind of like out of a World War II movie. There was an officer from the Air Force, signed off the paperwork. We boxed all the systems up. We had just trained the field service operators. Everything got loaded into a truck, taken to the airport, loaded on a general's plane, and flew to Iraq. So it was that quick, and it was crazy. They were doing things that, bypassed a lot of the other normal pathways to contracting and everything.
Right.
And our systems got to Iraq in October, and we were part of the Battle of Mosul and part of the Battle of Raqqa and Syria and Afghanistan.
Now Derek was proud of, what did the Iraqi general say? He made a comment, it's up on the wall there.
So that is the day the drone stopped.
The day the drone stopped.
That refers to, that was the day we showed up, our system showed up in Mosul. There was a standstill. Basically, the Iraqi military could not move forward. Their drones were watching where they were going. They were calling rocket or mortar attacks. They were dropping ordnance. So we got there, and our guys proceeded as we marched through into Mosul. Our operators dropped over 500 drones. And then as the Battle of Mosul was raging and then coming out of Mosul, it was another 500. So we dropped over 1,000 drones. This is all now
drones.
Public record.
Over 1,000 drones
we brought down. So that's now in the Army annuals, and you can actually see some of that in the Army history stuff coming out, how they fought, because that was the first time the Army used us and other means, and they basically went to war to regain the airspace control for that low-altitude airspace.
So this was against ISIS, right? This was against ISIS?
Yes.
Yeah, because short story real quick. I actually liberated Mosul the first time when the war broke out. I was part of the 101st Airborne Division when we went in and liberated Mosul. And I lived there for a year and a half. So very familiar with it. Probably looked a lot different when I was there.
I've obviously done something wrong. Yeah. Kenneth, your story makes it sound like you're Tony Stark or something, man.
He is.
No.
He's the Tony Stark of drones.
There you go.
Counter US, I guess. But it was, the big thing there was, it was very dangerous. You remember, you were there. So,
well, I was there before. It wasn't ISIS wasn't there. It was the Iraqi army, actually, when I was there.
Yeah.
We kicked the Iraqi army out.
So now ISIS didn't know what to do with this. And some of the stories we've heard since then is how they were describing having to go up against our system. It was like we were giving it a virus. We were giving the drones viruses, and they had no idea what we were doing. And then they tried to stop them. So they put out a bounty on the operator's head. So our operators had to be put into uniform and, basically protected because they were trying to take out the guys operating the systems. And then they took shots at the systems. You know, the only time they hit one of our radar panels twice, but it kept operating. So at this point, they were perplexed what to do. We had basically taken a very powerful tool away from them. And then that kind of extended into Afghanistan. And then as we're deployed now, we're in 8 different countries with the Air Force and the, you know, the Army and protecting air bases and things like that. So, you know, it's been a, the closest thing people kind of describe it as is the improvised explosive device battle, you know, where the enemy kept changing their tactics and changing the tech. And that's very much what this battle is. They're very successful using it. You take it away, they want that capability back, so they keep making changes and trying to regain that capability. And I mean, we don't see it much in the headline news over here, but in a lot of parts of the world, the drone warfare is going on crazy. Just this last weekend, again, you had the another Saudi Aramco oil depot was hit with cruise missiles and drones. And, you know, the price of oil spiked Sunday night to like over $70 a barrel. And, you know, luckily it doesn't look like there was much damage done to that site. But, you know, in other parts of the world, this is a real thing happening all the time.
Oh, yeah. And I can't believe you and I aren't on a plane right now to Riyadh. I just don't know what's happening, Kenneth. Why aren't we doing that? So you guys don't do maybe some seriousness in there, but, you guys don't do the actual, you guys are the detect, track, and command and control. I noticed you guys had in the vans, you had a command and control center there. That's your primary function, right? You guys don't build the actual weapon. You do the, that piece of it, right? The detect, track.
So we have other partners that do. So the tech track. So if you picture it, I know this isn't video, so I'll try to build it here. That you've got a 360-degree radar. It detects drones. We also detect people, vehicles. So we're looking from the ground up. There's a detection, the cameras, the thermal daylight EOIR package slews to that target. The operator can identify it. And at that point, you can use whatever is available at hand. So the system originally was built with an EW suite, electronic warfare suite, and that's how we were tracking drones. Over the years, we've also put 30-millimeter cannons on targets, drone targets. We can put a microwave weapon or the new laser systems on target. Net guns, which you can see on our website. If you don't have the other things available, then you've got a low collateral net gun that can shoot a net out of an air-powered rifle. The net just captures the drone and drops it to the ground. So it depends on what kind of capability you have. We are a layered approach. We don't come at this threat with just one single technology. We look at it, what can be utilized in that area. Sometimes regulations and rules of engagement will let you use some of the different technology. So we basically, bring to bear what can be applied in that situation, in that area. And that could be all kinds of different means of detection. It could be RF sensing. We work with a wonderful company called Citadel Technology. Citadel has a great RF sensing unit. We also, you got the radar, of course, that we've been talking about.
Right.
You've got cameras, so you got optical tracking and detection you can be bringing to bear. And then the defeat, like we talked about, all the different defeat mechanisms.
So basically, go ahead, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No,
you were saying the biggest thing, so that's kind of, what's the biggest thing?
So the biggest thing has been you've had to have one operator, one system, which creates a manpower issue. If you get 10 systems in an area, you get 10 operators.
Right.
So what our newest version is, our newest evolution is, it brings all this technology that's out there and what's going to be coming in the future under SHIELD, which is is what we call the new platform. And what that allows us to do through artificial intelligence and machine learning, we're actually taking the operator out of the loop and letting the machine do all the work. We're automatic detection, automatic classification of targets, making a lot of those early decisions so that he's now, all he has to do is pull the trigger. And what that's afforded us to do is take that footprint of one operator, one system, and actually turn that into one operator becoming a manager of all those 10 systems.
So you've got
one operator that can oversee everything. And then also what that's afforded us to do is pull in other capabilities that are in an area. So maybe they have other things they want to monitor that are not necessarily a counter drone mission. That can be incorporated into this. So you're using it for perimeter security and fire detection, things like that. We're getting all kinds of input from end users that are using our systems in different ways, not just strictly a counter UAS role.
Right. Some pivoting a little bit to other areas. So I'm a former Army Air Defense Officer. So you get this stuff all makes me really excited. But so we have to actually take a break for a second because,
and me too, but if you'd let me talk for a second.
All right.
So Kenneth, I got a lot of questions.
Kenneth and I are hanging, man.
Yeah, I feel like I'm left out here, man. I'm like, what am I, just a soundboard guy? I don't know what's going on here.
Yes.
Okay.
Just Nate.
So we are going to go to a quick 30-second break and we'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by CHAFA, the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. Since 1974, CHAFA has strengthened Colorado by investing in community development and affordable housing. CHAFA's community development team partners with lenders across the state to offer the financing you need to grow your business. Talk to your local lender about CHAFA's Cash Collateral Support Program, which helps small and medium-sized businesses access capital that would otherwise be unavailable due to collateral shortfalls. To learn more, visit chfainfo.com. Welcome back to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. I'm sitting here with Dennis across the hall or across the table from me. Welcome back, Dennis. And more importantly, we've got Mr. Kenneth Geyer, the co-founder and CEO of Light Eye Systems Incorporated. Welcome back, Kenneth.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so before Dennis starts talking again, I'm going to get a couple questions of my own in here.
Kenneth and I are going to go have coffee someday.
I'm
get
curious.
A beer.
So you guys been doing, you said 21 years. I want to know, dude, this is, I love this stuff. But the problem is I'm more on the drone side. I love the drone side, but I like the tech on the other side is kind of cool. But I'm curious, have you been getting feedback so to develop your system, right? Because as you said, it was kind of a give and take. The drones are getting better, so you have to come up with new things. But if you don't get the feedback, are you getting feedback from the field, or how does that work? How do you guys make changes to your product line?
Yeah, so it's many fronts. You got the info coming back from operators and field service reps that are out there working the systems. The implementation that comes back from all those different operations, all those different locales, what works, what doesn't work. Also, it's working with places like Red Six, which is a great red teaming company, who they go out and look at everything that's going on with drone attacks and things like that in the world. They look at the drone technology. They keep us appraised of what's kind of going on out there that may not meet the normal news wire feeds. They dig deep and find info out there and find out what kind of practices people are using or employing or how they're using drones in new ways. And it really... it comes in from any source we can get. Sometimes the information comes in from drone operators themselves. They send us stuff. So it's just really, you know, it's a united front because the safer we make it to operate against a rogue drone, that means the guys that are doing it for pleasure or they're out there flying their drones to do maintenance or, you know, looking for surveys or all those kind of things, it allows them to operate safer because they don't have to worry about being claimed that, oh, we can't have your drone fly here. Well, sure you can. You know, these guys will make sure that nothing negative happens. And so it's really, you know, working hand in hand. Early days, we had a lot of people kind of look at us as anti-drone. It's like, we're not anti-drone.
Well,
you know, we just want to stop the bad guys.
Yeah, you're anti-drone specific drones, right? For the bad guy drones.
Right.
I had a really important question.
You can write it down.
I did.
I had the right questions down.
All right, I wrote it down.
So my next question. the mistakes, right? So have you guys ever made a mistake? Do you have a story that you guys have accidentally taken down?
I can't tell you that.
I'm talking like me personal $1,000 drone that I'm flying and hey crap, why'd my drone just fall out of the sky? Right? I mean, do you guys have to have insurance to protect yourself from that?
Oh yeah, we've got business insurance some of this, but you know, you can't use our defeat mechanisms outside of government facilities or government testing proving grounds. So it's not like we run the jammers or any of those other kind of defeat mechanisms here at our offices. So we don't really get exposed to having that kind of an incident happen. Okay. Everything we're doing is always on a controlled airspace type place. We have brought down drones with operators who just didn't believe we'd bring their drone down. And I put a drone in a tree at one organization's place at one point. They had to bring a crane out to get the drone back. But so we've had things like that happen. We've had issues where some of our, I can't really go into too much detail, but where some things weren't as effective as we thought, we'd have to diagnose where that was. It's not really a mistake, but you'd go back and look at why was that not as effective as we thought it would be, and you change it. And, mold it into what it needs to be. So
Kaizen theory.
Knock on wood, we haven't really had any kind of thing that I would classify as like a misfire or a mistake.
Yeah.
The biggest thing for us, we just want those unscripted types of events where that's where you get to see what happens in the real world. If everything's scripted and run a certain way all the time, yeah, you can always do great against that. But we really try to do things that we want the drone operators and the red team to catch us off guard. We want them to do things we don't think about, because that's how we evolve the system and it grows. Is I need that input. I need to know where our system has holes. That way we can understand how to get rid of those holes.
Exactly. If you don't know where you're weak, you can never make it strong.
No, and that's part of the hard problems here in country, because in the U.S., regulations and everything, we can't try a lot of the things that we could do in a battlefield situation. So it really is kind of handcuffing us in many ways for trying some of the newest things, newest tech, newest different strategies out there. And that's why we're constantly working and trying to work with the organizations like AUVSI and those kind of companies to work with legislation and try to give us places where we can go and fight the system, work the system like you would fight it, probably one of the biggest challenges out there.
Well, I was going to ask you, what's your biggest challenge that you have right now? And we're going to, when we get done with the podcast, I'd like to talk to you about some things later, but, What's your biggest challenge right now with regards to, the work you're doing?
I think that is it. The biggest challenge is being able to have a location where we can try all the different things that technology affords us to bring to bear.
Okay.
There's some great stuff out there, but there's literally no place in continental U.S. where you can go and try that. You got FCC, FAA, you've got all kinds of other regulations, state, local authorities, counties, and even in some of the military bases, it's really hard, and it takes a lot of planning and time to get some range time to try things, and we really need that to be improved. If we're going to deliver to the warfighter capability that's ready when he needs it, we got to be able to do that stuff back here.
Right. And
that's the big challenge.
Well, so I'm gonna shift gears on you slightly away from this kind of tech stuff. So as a we interview quite a few small businesses and like to talk about that a little bit, and your advice to other startups. But so as you've been developing your company now and you're getting to be, it's still a small company, but it's getting larger. What advice do you have for other startups? If you're a government contractor and you got some kind of tech out there, we're talking to quite a few companies like that, actually, who are just starting. It's one guy. He's got this great tech. He wants to move it forward. Do you have any advice for them as far as, like, how to, move the ball?
Or what are the biggest pitfalls to watch out for?
Yeah, that was the next one. My biggest challenges with that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah, the biggest pitfall is realizing how long it takes and how difficult it is for a small company to get on contract. I think that's one of the challenges that a lot of people underestimate. You could take months to get from a demonstration to actually a contract, and that's if you don't need to make changes to your product or your software. Also, contract vehicles. It's not easy for a lot of big military to get to a small business. You really have to work with partners and find partners that are on IDIQ. That's a type of contract out there, and other types of vehicles that allow them to easily get to you to buy what you do. You may have the greatest idea in the world, but if that contracting officer can't get to you, you're not going to be able to get that contract. So, and I think that's really novel to the defense industry, these kind of challenges that we face, where if you know, you're in the commercial market, somebody likes your product, they buy it. Here, if somebody likes your product, you're going to go through and make sure it's qualified. It's got to go through all the testing. It's got to be accepted. And that's before you get into all the contracting stuff. And in some cases, you know, the length of time, you know, you really have to make sure you're managing your resources and you're working on other things, not just letting that encompass you, because it's easy to kind of get drilled down to looking at just one opportunity, and that opportunity may take a long time to fulfill. So you really have to be out there just talking to everybody, and then partnerships. I think one of the biggest things, don't underestimate, is the partners you can make out there. You know, we all talk about it as small defense contractors. You know, the primes always eat our lunch. The primes want to take over, but there's many things you got to do that you need a partner like a prime company to, in some cases, BSM prime lets you do most of the work, but they got to go out and do the contracting. They have an easy path to get to you, may cut that process down to weeks instead of months.
Right. Yeah. And so admin piece too, I think is really, you know, as your startup company, we hear over and over again, you know, I didn't know about a facilities clearance and I don't know how to get my people cleared and I don't know how to get a cage code or even, you know, either farther left than that. You know, how do I get into the system? And we push people towards PTAC. Did you use PTAC when you were going, or how did you find your way through that initial piece?
So starting back in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of resources back then. I think there's quite a bit more now to kind of help guide you. But there's also a lot more regulations and challenges now that you have to meet them. So, but back in those days, it was finding the people, like for us, you know, getting the cage codes, finding a person over State Department to get us set up for ITAR stuff and really working through that. It was person to person. It was finding people that were in these agencies that were willing to talk you through it or help you out, because a lot of it was confusing. There was a lot of missteps early days where we would fill something out wrong and then find out a couple weeks later and have to go back and restart of it all over again. You know, and you look at it today, I think there is more available out there, and there's more people that are willing to work as contractors and help set you up. That has a cost to it, but they are usually, you know, people that have got a lot of experience in doing the things you're looking to do. But, you know, I think a lot of times it's people just don't know where to go.
Right.
You know,
right.
I think we don't do a good job of sharing that information out there, or a good enough job. Cause a lot of people ask me all the time, like, how do you get things? Like you mentioned a cage code and these kind of things. And a lot of people think that they can go get a security clearance or their site, their facility cleared without having a DD-254 from the military. You're not.
Right.
You need a reason for them to clear you. And that's, you know, it's kind of a chicken and egg when you're a small company, because you need to be cleared to get into some of these meetings to have information, but you can't get that clearance till you have a contract that requires you to get that information. So that's a big challenge.
That's why we started the Smalls, actually, was to help small. We saw that as a need, that the information and the resources are there. It's just, it doesn't seem to be getting out as well as it could be. So that was really the impetus for us to get together and start, you know, how do we help other companies? How do we get the word out? How do we, you know, get these organizations to talk to each other and collaborate? And again, that's, and this networking piece you talked about, you know, our motto is collaborate, network, and grow. I mean, that's really, or network, collaborate, and grow. But that gets back to the heart of why we wanted to do this. And we see that also as a challenge. And we hear it over and over again, right, that there's resources out there. Like last week, we had a great conversation with the Pikes Peak workforce. Oh, my gosh, all the things they offer. We didn't even know that. So it's just pretty amazing.
Well, and back to your chicken and egg type thing, you know, I think that's why some of these programs out there, if you see the accelerators, the these campuses around that are popping up now around that can help you get in front of customers, or even tech scouts, right? That can help you socialize whatever you've got with a user that might be able to use your tech. And that's tough to find those type of people, and it's tough to find to make those connections. Cause like you said, without making those connections, you can't even think about getting your clearance or anything like that.
So I have one more. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to add, you know, I think Smalls is a great idea. And, but, you know, some of the things is people don't realize that, you know, just getting somebody that likes your product is, you now have to write up the white papers. You now have to make the submissions when the RFQ comes, you know, in all these things. And then Now you're going to have requirements like CMMC, which is the new cybersecurity, where they can't even buy from you unless you're qualified with a cybersecurity plan. So it's only partway there when you get in front of somebody and show them the product and they like it. There's just so much to work.
Right. It's not just the tech. It's all this other back end kind of things for government contractors that really kind of are the pivot point.
So one of the rule of thumbs is never develop your company solely around government work because of that very reason. I'm curious, you guys say you were mentioning that your systems typically can only operate in government owned space. Do you have any commercial stuff that you guys sell, or are you guys 100% government?
We're probably 95% government, military. Okay. We do have time to time. We have things to transition over. There are things, you know, some of what we're doing right now in counter drone that will transition over as regulations recently, you know, allow for airports to be protected, nuclear sites, oil infrastructure, those kind of places. So yeah, we will have commercial stuff that becomes commercial and makes that transition.
And you also
we
do
develop
thermals.
A lot of this stuff as thermal cameras is another one. We develop a lot of this as commercial goods, but unfortunately, mostly it's defense applications. And it's not a bad place to play. You know, it's kind of funny. I was talking to another startup CEO and. He came over from doing purely commercial to defense, and he goes, "Why the hell do you do this?" I said, "Believe me, it's a mission. It's because we want to support the warfighter, and that's what we believe in, and we've always wanted to create product that goes that direction. We don't do this because it's an easy path. It's nothing easy about this." Yeah. I think some people see defense and think, "Wow, defense is
lots of money.
Make so much money in the defense market." Yeah. And there is lots of money, but it's not easy to get into those.
There's lots of money, but it costs lots of money to get to a point where you make anything, right? You don't go into defense contracting thinking you're going to make 50% profit like you do in the commercial world. You're going to go in making 8% usually. I mean, that's the government's like, this is what you should be making. They tell you what your profit margin should be. It's not the other way around.
Yeah, and you're going to get audited, and you're going to get checked, and they're going to... You know, so and especially the more successful you get, the higher you get up, they're going to do more and more checks. Oversight. So you got to be doing this because this is the industry you love and want to be in. I think that's a message that doesn't always come through. And unfortunately, I see a lot of companies that start up and they're gone way too soon because they may have had a great idea, but they just didn't realize what they were getting into.
It's hard.
It is. And like, you know, sequestration, when it came years ago, took the wind right out of our sails. You know, it really got, it landed heavily on us. We had a lot of contracts that were put on hold and stopped or frozen. And, so you got to be prepared for those. And you knock on wood all the time and you get a little God's luck on your side here and there. And, you find a way through it and hopefully you're coming out with new products and new things. So after a lull, you're not showing the same stuff you showed 2 years ago. And I think that's hard to do, and there's a lot of sacrifice that comes along with that, especially when you're a small business.
Right.
It's not for the faint of heart by any means.
So I have a final question for you. When we were in the production facility, there was a very important vehicle in the production facility, and we thought initially it was a camouflage vehicle for your systems, but it turns out that it was a vendor vehicle that one of you guys owns, I guess. It's a Mexican food truck.
Yeah, so New Mexico. So Tom Scott, my partner, it's his daughter's food truck. We are entrepreneurs. So Tom and I have had eight companies. Light Eye is our big baby and always been our baby. We've had other things we've done and spun off. So we are addicted to being entrepreneurs, put it that way. And that's also another challenge is my fellow entrepreneurs start out there at the biggest thing is letting go and bringing in talent to help you go to the next level because you can't always look at everything as an entrepreneur. And that was probably one of the challenges for Light Eye was jumping over that chasm, was getting from being an entrepreneurial startup to where we're doing heavy production and field service ops and all those. And we had to bring in people a lot smarter than we were to do that.
Yeah. Well, I was still focused on the Mexican food because I'm a white man in a Mexican, a Mexican in a white man's skin. And
seriously, dude, now we're going to get canceled.
I love Mexican food. So anytime you guys want to bring the truck down this way, you just let me know and we'll set it up.
I'm already.
So it's It's food straight out of Santa Fe, New Mexico.
There you go.
Anybody
see?
Who's been to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and
yes.
restaurants like Tomasitas and stuff like that.
I'm already disappointed. Somebody
green chili.
Somebody texted me this morning or this afternoon. Did you see that Disney Plus now has canceled Dumbo and Peter Pan for any children's accounts? And I'm like, what? I can't keep up anymore.
Yeah. Well, anyways, but we like
Mexican food.
Cancel history.
I love
cancel history and forget.
We do breakfast burritos once a month here because we're big breakfast burrito fans.
When is that? It's March, isn't it?
It is March. We need to do that pretty soon.
We should do it Friday.
Okay, let's do it Friday.
It's supposed to be like snowing, like 2 feet of snow.
That's good. That's when we should do it. Good Mexican day. So anyways, we saw that out there and it just reminded, I wanted to ask you about that.
That would have been perfect. Seriously, that's like urban warfare right there. Just put it in one of those trucks and I could see the top opening up and your system come out and blossom up the top of it. It'd be pretty sweet.
You see, I would never tell you if it wasn't.
Touche. What kind of questions do you think... Is there anything else out there that you think that young entrepreneurs or people trying to get into the DoD space, any other advice you could give them?
Oh, man. Thinking back to my younger self many moons ago.
Well, think about it from where you are now. How did you get to where you are now?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm sure he never makes mistakes now.
He has a bowl of baseballs to throw at people.
Yeah, I have a nice display of baseballs on my desk, which is probably dangerous. But looking at myself back then after 30 years of doing businesses, the biggest thing was willing to sacrifice, realizing that I think there was a point where I realized I can always make more money. I can always go do things out there. So don't be afraid to risk and lose something. And learn from that loss. I think that was the biggest thing that has taught us over all this time is making mistakes is where we learn. When we win, we did what we were supposed to do. We're successful and everything worked the way it's supposed to work. It's when we lost or when we did stuff. And then always don't make emotional decisions and say, oh, I'm going to quit this or do that just because of the moment. There were times where we lost out on a big contract and thought, oh my God, what are we going to do? We worked so hard to get that. We didn't win it. And then we'd find out the contract never got funded. And had we ramped up for that contract, it would have been detrimental to our company. So, things don't always seem, terrible in hindsight looking back. I had somebody ask me, he said, where was the crossroads? Where did it happen? And it's like, there were a lot of them all the time. How do you point at one and say that did it? But I think that's the biggest thing is, be willing to live in that one room apartment and Even if you get built up to something, my wife and I always talk about it, it's material things. We can always sell it, and we'll start over. She's an entrepreneur too, as well, and we just that's how we look at it. Is what's important to us is our family, and as much hours as we put in trying to stay connected to the family is always hard, and that's got to be important to you. And that should be the part that you don't forget about when you're doing this and getting caught up in it. Man, looking when I started out, it's just like, obviously I didn't give up because I got here, but I think there's times where if I would have met my older self, I would have said, yeah, you can do it. Don't worry. You can do it. It'll be this or it'll be the next idea, but you can do it. Just keep staying in there. So.
Yep. So I have one last question for you. You kind of touched upon this earlier where you said you guys didn't spend a whole lot of money or time on the marketing side. In retrospect, do you suggest people spend more on marketing? The way it sounds to me, you guys have an amazing marketing team right now, because obviously you're getting your name out now. But it's kind of curious on that, because I see that from, for example, I worked for Honeywell for 15 years, Honeywell Aerospace Division, and they spent like $0 on marketing. We had a team of 700 people here in Colorado Springs, and nobody knew Honeywell Aerospace was even in Colorado Springs. And I was like, you're a multi-billion dollar organization. Why don't you let people know you're here so you can get more business that way? But I guess there's always curiosity to me of where is that level of marketing that you do?
So I think it really depends on what market you're in. So when we were doing a lot of special forces SOCOM type work, we didn't want advertisement. We had a web page, but it had very basic stuff on it. It was really, we were engaged with the end user, but as the company evolved, that does, you know, around 2015, we realized, man, we're back to where we need to get our name out there. Nobody knows who we are. We're, you know, now we're 21 years old. You know, it's like, yes, we probably should have engaged marketing sooner. But, you know, I've had other companies, and my marketing team that's at Lydai now worked for me at another company that I had called Analog Technologies that did a joint venture with IBM and built small computers. So there have been other companies where we have spent a lot on marketing and really made sure our name was out there. It was just kind of Lydai's pedigree of how we started that we wanted to be more quiet early on. We didn't really invest in that. And when we did decide to turn that on, we had a lot of work to do. There's been a lot of hours put in on everything. We had to really up our game because politically, as a small company coming into a new field, it was easy to dismiss Lydai. You know, it's like, oh, the government wants to turn to General Dynamics or Boeing or some of the bigs. And even though we had a full solution and hadn't been a little bit better known, it would have been an easier battle. So, yeah, definitely, if you've got something and you want to reach people, you got to have marketing. You need to budget for it. And I know that's hard. People say, oh, well, I'll cut down on the web page or I'll cut down on this. But really, that is your face. I mean, that is what's out there is, and that's how, you know, people network. You know, social media is important. Even though we're not a restaurant or a bar, we're still, we got to have a presence because there are people that say, hey, you know, look at this post. And that leads back to us and a whole discussion begins.
And it's a professional thing too, right? If you're a company that's out there that's been out, say, for a year or two, and you don't have a website yet, you're behind the power curve, way behind the power curve. Well, or if you're still using Gmail addresses or Yahoo addresses, Hotmail addresses, when you're a 2-year-old company, I'm like, no, what are you doing? I know it's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks a year to have that DSN, and but it's something you have to do.
You got to. Yeah, you have to, because if you get it, to be honest, even I don't think anybody, if you get a Gmail address email, a lot of times it doesn't even get caught. It's in the filters, you know, you got to have a real presence so people know you're serious about what you do. And it's just as important as a business card. You know, there's just, you know, it's easy when your things are getting tough or you're starting out and you try not to make investments, you know, in play things that you think you wait till later, but marketing is not one of those. It's definitely, you need to either be out on foot networking, which is hard to do in a COVID world, or you need to be out there, you know, selling yourself in every other way you can. And, you know, depending on your exit strategy, if you're an entrepreneur who wants to sell companies, then you definitely need marketing. You need people to want to buy what you've got.
Yep.
You're going to increase your value on somebody buying it. And on the reverse, you know, we're in an M&A mode right now. We're trying to look for acquisition targets, so merger targets. And that's another thing that marketing has helped is our profiles lifted. People know who we are. I don't spend the first half hour or an hour in a meeting explaining Lydai and our culture and everything. A lot of people we talk to now, they already know us. They've seen us. They've gone to the webpage. They watched some of the videos. So it's definitely a tool beyond just selling.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of marketing,
we're going to help you too.
Yeah. We want to help. We want to push you guys as far as we can to help you guys out. So to start off, how can people get a hold of you? What is your guys' website and how do you want people to get a hold of you?
Yep. So our website's easy. It's LITEYE.com, Lydai.com. And then depending on what they're looking for in our company, if you go to our website, you can see different people. If you're looking for the sales BD guys or the technical guys, or you want to engage with our field services division or all that kind of stuff, that's on the webpage.
This is great. So you heard it first here. It's lightye.com, LITEYE.com.
Correct.
Hey, and just Kenneth, wanted to tell you thank you personally for allowing us to come visit you last week. And the facility and your staff, they were all terrific, and it was a great visit. And thank you for being on the podcast today, and hopefully we can help you get the word out with Lydai, not just from this podcast, but other activities as well. And we're debating about having smalls meetings here again, and once we get that going up in Denver, and here in Colorado Springs and Aurora, we'll make sure that we get you an invite to the meetings, to come to those. So
or
we
present
can get some,
too, yeah, right? Networking, what you guys do, and, who you are. Yep. That's where we really shine on the networking side. So
right. So well, anyways, thank you very much for being on today. We appreciate your help and your support.
Oh, you're much welcome. And it's not just me. There's a network of good people around me, and we'd like to be involved any way we can.
Well, we will definitely keep you guys involved. I want to say thanks as well to you and your entire team, not only for coming on the podcast, for having us up there, giving us a tour, but just to say thanks for doing what you guys are doing, helping all of us stay safe. So with that, I just want to say thanks one last time. And this is Just Nate signing off for this week.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Smalls Cast podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode.
See you at the next episode.